Hi, I'm Jay Barrett. This week on a pre-recorded coffee table, I talk with Homer writer and photographer Christina Whiting, who last year set off on a cross-country trip in the lower 48 to document America during the time of COVID. I spoke with her a couple of weeks ago.
Okay, this is Christina Whiting, and I am excited to be speaking with Jay this morning about my project Behind the Mask, Our Stories. I'm a writer, photographer, adventure lover from Homer, Alaska, but I am currently continuing my project here after 3 months on the road. Right now I'm on Whidbey Island in Washington State near Seattle. Do you have any questions for me, or am I just going to ramble on? Or
I guess I was just going to start with the first question. Tell me about your project and why you decided during a pandemic to jump up and do this when so many other people are, hunkered down.
Yeah. So, really the place that I operate from, no matter what I'm doing anywhere, whether I'm in Homer professionally, my different jobs or creating events around town, like my, the writing group I have or the travel group or anything. Over the years, I just realized I'm really personally motivated by creativity, connection, community. And I just have a deep and profound passion for storytelling, So I grew up with a family of storytellers, and I kind of try to carry that torch. And so I flew out of Homer on February 29th last year. I wanted to take a month of intentional writing, and I had found a little place to stay on Whidbey Island in Washington. And so February 29th, I flew out and landed here, and it was lovely. Of course, then the pandemic hit, and like everywhere else, there was, a scramble for toilet paper and hand sanitizer and everyone figuring it out. And it was it was a blessing to be here. The place I was in was perfect. It's tucked in the woods. It was a very safe haven. There was a neighborhood. I could go walking. There were woods nearby. So I felt like I went hiking with my mask on. But I had this sense of kind of cheating on my community, because here I was kind of witnessing a pandemic in a community that was not my own. I had been to Whidbey Island in January, actually for a week, my first time on the island ever, where I was in between visiting family in Canada in a different part of Washington, and I'd rented a tiny house. That's why I decided to come back here, in February to write, because I thought it would be very nurturing for my creativity. And but I was in this community where I didn't know anybody. I would hop into the store to get supplies, and everyone was a stranger, and I'd be on the hiking trail, and I'm used to Homer, where you wave at people when you're driving down the road because there are cars. You walk into Safeway or Saveymore or any of the art galleries, and I've been in Homer 20 years, so I know a lot of people, and I love that proximity. I love that deep sense of community in Homer. So I was here witnessing, there were obvious things that I knew were related to the pandemic, people wearing masks and the lines and whatnot. But I didn't have a sense for how the pandemic was impacting people here. I didn't have a more picture. And so I created a Facebook page, Behind the Mask Hype and Our Stories. And really my whole motivation behind that was that I wanted to open it up to family, friends, community members. I don't have a huge Facebook following, but just, I wanted to create a place where people in Homer, friends, family around, the nation, the world, invite people to post a photo or a video that was a little glimpse into their life during this time. So really, selfishly, it was initially motivated by my feeling of isolation from my own community, and wanting to witness what my friends and family and community were doing, whether someone was posting, a picture of them in the store or on the beach or whatever the case was. So that was kind of the original idea, was what is life like during the pandemic? And then that was great. I had, a great turnout. People were posting and sharing, and I shared a few photos here and there, but it primarily wasn't about me. I was just like facilitating, the space, holding the space for people to share. And then it kind of reached a little bit of a lull. I think people, pandemic fatigue. So I was on Whidbey Island until the second week of May. And then I came home, worked my summer jobs, farmer's market and whatnot. And the farmer's market was constantly witnessing people's, not so much their verbal stories, because, you know, the farmer's market this year was pretty much, you know, kind of in and out. But, you know, the masks, people's reactions to, you know, our mask mandate, you know, masks being required and whatnot. And so, I don't know, I'm just a very curious individual. And then my skill set happens to be writing, photography, interviewing, and I love people and I love stories. And so in the middle of the summer, this idea just started brewing of, you know, you know, I saw a little bit of the pandemic kicking in Washington State. Then I'm here in the heart of the pandemic, you know, in the summer out there in the public eye, you know, in my community that I know so well, you know, seeing what's happening with the pandemic, how people are adjusting. And I just, this idea just kind of started, I don't know, just percolating, right? Of, gosh, I'd really, like, what are people doing in the lower 48? And yeah, I can go to the news sources and, you know, I'm here on KBBI and, you know, watch on the news and on social media and, you know, what's happening. That's not usually really good enough for me. Myself in situations. I don't know, just like years ago, you know, all the news about all, you know, how horrible the Muslims were. Don't include that in the story. But, you know, I went to Jordan because I was like, you know, I don't know. I want to see this all for myself, and had an amazing experience. So I just wanted to put myself smack dab in the middle of the pandemic, in the middle of the nation, and witness for myself how people were adjusting. I am so intrigued by the resiliency of the human spirit. I also had witnessed some unkindness in Homer, in my community, people being unkind to one another, people being unkind to me. And even, I will say for myself, this feeling of kind of angst and anger and confusion and chaos inside. And so it was also a bit of a leap of faith in my fellow man to just put myself out there. So I spent a couple of months online trying to find a small camper or a van or something. Well, I actually initially was going to try to buy a vehicle in Homer, convert it and drive out the highway. And then I couldn't, you know, it was impossible to cross the Canadian border. So, you know, my project had lots of beginnings, starts, little ideas, you know, how the thread goes. And then you're like, okay, no, that can't happen. Okay, well, let's try this. So this entire project has just been super organic. I had a very loose goal, and it was basically to just wander the nation, you know, meeting people, seeing some places I'd never seen, documenting during the pandemic through photos, through video recordings when people would let me, through audio. I had no idea if people were going to want to talk to some girl from Homer, Alaska. You know, people's stories are pretty private. So I ended up finding a van. They had locations in Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Nevada. My original goal was to drive the Pacific Northwest area, you know, spend a few months doing that, maybe catch the northern states. But with the fires in California, I decided to 86 Los Angeles and San Francisco. And so I got my van in Nevada, and I started October 21st. I flew out of Homer on October 19th. Spent a couple of days with Carrie, who was a longtime Homer resident living in Henderson, Nevada. So she met me at the airport, which was a wonderful start to my journey. And then spent a couple of days, yeah, just, you know, with her, wandering around parks and stuff outside. And then picked up my van and started out, headed towards Death Valley was where I started. And I never intended to be in the Southwest. At the very beginning, the Southwest, you know, eventually I wanted to go to all the states, but the Pacific Northwest was really my initial launching off point. But the universe had other plans.
So I have to ask, your very first trip in your van on your COVID discovery journey is to Death Valley. What was up with that? How did you pick that?
Yeah, a couple people have brought that up. They're like, wait, Death Valley? You know, it was simply because of the natural beauty of Death Valley.
I want to go there, actually. On my last Lower 48 road trip, I missed it by, like, you know, most of a state, but it's on my list. I want to go to Death Valley, too.
Death Valley was spectacular. It was spectacularly hot. It was in the 90s, which I didn't really expect. It was absolutely spectacular. The scenic drives, I love sand dunes, so I will go out of my way for sand dunes, which I did multiple times on this trip. But I will say that my very first interview, so I kind of started out just doing photos. You know, it took me a little bit to get my feet underneath me, right? Like, I was feeling a little bit shy, like, I don't want to be rejected, or are people going to say no? You know, it takes a little bit. And my very first official recorded interview was actually with Carrie, who used to live in Homer. Her story was really interesting. She is a quilter. And when the pandemic hit and she heard that people didn't have masks, she would work all day and then come home, grab something to eat, and work through the wee hours of the night making masks, hundreds and hundreds, and continues to make masks and gave me masks, dozens of beautiful masks to give away to people, you know, on my trip. So she was my very first interview. Yeah, I highly recommend Death Valley. And Death Valley was, I met a man from Las Vegas, and I was on the outskirts of Death Valley in this little town called Beatty. And the first thing that caught my eye was a coffee kiosk. The second thing that caught my eye was that the person running the coffee kiosk was petting a herd of donkeys or mules. And so I was like, well, I have to stop here. His name is Jason, and he's an artist from Las Vegas. But when the pandemic hit, you know, all the galleries closed, and he had no place to show, no place to, you know, exhibit, nothing. So he came back to this community where he had family roots and built himself this little kiosk. And he was doing selling snow cones in the summer and coffee in the fall. It was lovely. So I recommend Death Valley. It's a spectacular place. Wow. The scenic drives are beautiful. The sand dunes are beautiful.
What you said about sand dunes earlier about you'd go out of your way for sand dunes. I was on this road trip I took in 2017. I was driving south through Colorado looking to get to New Mexico. And I'm just driving along, and then there's this sign that says Great Sand Dune National Monument or something, you know, like 40 miles east of where I was. I was like, well, there's 80 miles now I got to add to my trip, because I turned immediately left and drove to the Great Sand Dunes, and it was amazing.
Yeah, it was I went to them as well my first time. It was spectacular. I also went to White Sands National Monument in New Mexico.
Just going to ask you if you went there, because I did too.
Oh my gosh. And then the sand dunes in Texas.
Man, it's just amazing to get out there into the wide open spaces.
You know, I don't advocate for people getting in their cars or jumping on a plane right now. And so here's what I did. So I was very aware of, you know, quarantining, isolation. You know, obviously this is we're in the middle of a pandemic. I very purposefully made the decision to be as safe as I could be. So I knew I could be in my van and be completely self-contained. And that was true. And that was perfect. With the exception of the fact that if I had only stayed in my van, I would have seen amazing places, but I wouldn't have met anyone. So I never took my mask off. So let me put it a different way. Whenever I stepped out of my vehicle, I had my mask on, whether I was hiking on a trail, walking across the sand dunes, pumping gas, you know, using a restroom, going to take a shower in a gas station. You know, I took my mask off in the shower, but I had my mask on all the time. And for the most part, people wore their masks as well. And even with their masks on, we maintained 6 or more feet. When they didn't have their masks on, I maintained a lot more. It was this little dance. I mean, someone from Homer suggested that I meet their, I think it was her aunt. And I was close to where her aunt was. So we connected by phone, and the person who suggested I speak to her aunt told me that she was waiting for her COVID test. It was a woman named Betty, who's 90. And I show up at our doorstep, you know, we knock and we're keeping our distance. And she said, yeah, you know, I just got my COVID test, turns out my pastor, you know, and I had this real, I'm a kind person. So I'm standing there and I'm interviewing. But even when someone says, yeah, I'm waiting for the results of my COVID test, you know, my pastor tested positive, you internally and physically, you take a step back, right? I was in Texas chasing the border wall. I wanted to see the thing for myself, and I ended up down this road that ended up being private property. But this man came out of his house. He was very, very nice. You know, first of all, he was on his doorstep. And then, you know, as we were talking, I was like, you know, hey, just this and that. And then I said, what kind of trees are these? You know, and is that a cotton field? And he became more open and, you know, put the gun down and, you know, walked towards me. And but he's had COVID 3 different times and was not wearing a mask. And that really made me act. And it's this interesting thing of, I don't know, it's a trip. Like, you don't want to hurt someone's feeling by taking a step back, but at the same time, this is a potential, you know, life-threatening thing. So it's kind of like I was in this little internal dance of, like, I would do it really casually, like, oh, I would just, like, it was like shifting my foot to, you know, putting my, you know, shifting my weight to my other foot, but taking a step back. So my pandemic dance, oh, interesting, as I step back and adjust my mask tighter around my nose.
So you know, I'm curious about that. How, if you were to put a ratio to it, a percentage of people wearing masks and not wearing masks, what would you say you observed?
Yeah, I would say most people were wearing masks. That was another thing that was really fascinating.
Like 70%? 8 out of 10?
I'd say 75 to 80%.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah. So I was in Nevada, you know, and each state had its own mandate, you know, passed by its governor. So Nevada was different from Arizona, was different from New Mexico, was different from Colorado, was certainly different from Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas, and then back through New Mexico, Arizona, Nevada. That was my route. So when I started out, Nevada was pretty stringent. It was mask, basically mask in stores and like in Homer, you know, any public place, a mask. Arizona, their governor had lifted the mandate when I was there. So that would have been towards the end of October. And much fewer masks in Arizona, even though the signs all said, you know, masks required. You'd walk into a gas station and sometimes the employees had masks on, sometimes they didn't. New Mexico was one of the more stringent. New Mexico, when I was there, it was basically masks when you were outside of your house or your car. So walking down the street, any public place, masks. Similar in Colorado. Nebraska was actually, I hate to say it to them, Nebraskans, I loved Nebraska. It may have been one of my top favorite states, being from I'm a farm girl. So, you know, and probably the fewest masks of all the states. Oklahoma, Texas, you know, I had been hearing a lot of like, oh, the numbers were really high. But the Texans I encountered and the communities I went through, people were masked. And then back through, you know, New Mexico, Arizona. So it was lovely to see people on trails, you know, wearing masks, or at the very least, you know, had it down the chin. And then when they spotted you, put it up over their mouth, which is, you know, similar to what I did. Colorado Springs, I was on a trail for 2 hours and I've counted 86 people on the trail and two other people had masks on. So that was pretty disappointing. But yeah. So my experience is most people were, and it really varied. And then it varied. You know, I didn't spend a lot of time in cities, but some of the numbers in the rural areas were certainly higher. In Nebraska and Kansas, some of the people that I spoke to, the numbers were a lot higher. I've been off the road for 2.5 weeks now, and so I'm kind of sorting through the process of what I learned and whatnot. And I certainly don't want to make any grand statistical analysis of, you know, state by state or, you know, county versus city. That's not really what I'm about or what this project was about. But I was delighted to see how many people were wearing masks. I was delighted to see people were taking the opportunity to be creative. People were, you know, wearing some really interesting masks. If you go to my Facebook page, you know, I have thousands of photos of people in their masks, you know, Black Lives Matter masks, Tweety Bird masks, you know, just colorful colors, their sports teams, during Halloween, you know, Halloween masks, Christmas, holiday masks.
It really has become a new fashion accessory.
Yeah. Does my mask go with my outfit? Yeah.
Yeah. Earlier you mentioned a concern about, you know, being rejected, you know, besides the skeptical guy on the porch with the gun, were there any people who just flat out turned you down or got aggro at you for, you know, why are you even talking about masks? This is all a hoax, blah, blah, blah. Or did you run into anybody who was really against it or really not interested in talking to you?
Yeah, and I will say the man with the gun, I was on his property, so I actually don't count that as, because I didn't approach him to say, can I hear your story? I was, real, for intents and purposes, unintentionally trespassing, so I give him a pass big time. But other than that, yeah. So I have, I had a flat tire in Texas, Big Bend National Park and Big Bend State Park. I had gotten a flat tire way out in the middle of the boonies. And it all worked out fine. Got my spare on and whatnot. So I had this flat tire. It was towards the end of my trip. I wasn't really concerned I was going to get another one. So I just had this flat tire in the back of the van. And I was going to get it replaced when I got back. But all along my trip, I was trying to support small businesses, mom and pops. I would try to get, a coffee here and there or a sandwich and, to try to support the businesses that were struggling. And so I was in a small town. And where was I? Let's see. I was in Texas. It was out of Texas or New Mexico. I apologize. Anyway, I was in this small town, photographed really, that has kind of like partly, the history. And so there was all these old buildings, and I'm photographing all this stuff. And I see this as I'm driving out, I see this sign, tire repair. And I'm like, oh, great. So I pull up in the van, and my van has its, the business name all over it. But I had gotten to my project, what I was doing on the side of the van, just to let people know. Otherwise, I'm some girl in a van with California plates. I put it on my van, people might come up to me and say, hey, what's going on? So I pull up. And I walk up to this little tire business, tire repair, sales, little kind of place. And I've got my mask on, and I'm like, and I'm so excited to be there. I'm like, okay, great. I found a place. I can support a small business, get my tire fixed, and then get on my way. And I'm like, and I said, oh, hey, I have a flat tire. I'm wondering, and he interrupted me. And he says, why are you wearing a mask? And it's like, oh, just to be safe for me and for you. Well, masks are stupid. They don't work, and you're an idiot for wearing one. And then I was so shocked. I mean, that was not my experience on this trip at all. And I was so stunned. I just kind of stopped for a minute and kind of looked at him. And I said, okay, well, you can have your opinion. That's totally fine. I said, but I've got a flat tire. And then he started swearing at me, calling me all sorts of names. And I just looked at him, I was trying to support a small business, but never mind, I'll take my business somewhere else. And then he just continued to curse at me while I walked to the van and drove away. That was, so extreme. That's not my experience on this trip at all. So that was not me approaching someone for a story. That was, that was that. I think in my entire, I haven't counted up how many people I interviewed. I did some written interviews. Mostly were video interviews. A few people preferred just audio. But I have hundreds and hundreds of video of interviews. I think of all of those, I had two people say no. It was when I was in Colorado Springs. I had just spent 2 hours in a tattoo parlor. I just wandered into this place. I was visiting, my sister is in Colorado Springs. I was visiting her, waiting for her to get off work, just kind of wandering around. It was dark. I could, looking for somebody to interview. And I see this tattoo parlor. So I just drive up, and I've got two tattoo artists and a client. And I just introduce myself. Hey, I'm Christine. I'm from Alaska. And I'm just doing this. Ta-da. Would you guys mind if I chatted with you a little bit? No. I spent two and a half hours with these guys. It was wonderful. And then that was fantastic. And then I left. Randy and Poncho and Bobby, those were the guys. I left them, went next door to a barbershop and was basically run out the door. I think he said, we don't need any marketing help. We're fine. I said, oh, no, this is an art project. And he was like, no. And just turned his back to me, turned the chair around, turned his back to me. And I was like, okay. So, it happens so rarely. I wasn't taking it personally. Most people I was prepared to give these long explanations of what I was doing, and most people were like, sure. I think that was the isolation of the pandemic. And I also come from a place where I just truly believe that people want to share their stories and they just need someone to listen and to be heard. But I think that the isolation of the pandemic itself worked in my favor for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find that people do want to share stories.
Well, and it got to the point where you know, I would think, okay, well, I'm just going to pop into here for 15 minutes. Well, 3 hours later, I interviewed the park ranger, and then he called his wife, and she brought her kids, and so now I'm get to interview this whole family. And so I don't know if it wasn't a pandemic, and I was just wandering the country, and I was like, hey, how long have you been a ranger? Would that have still happened? I don't know.
So you said you interviewed hundreds of people. Did I hear that right? Hundreds?
Oh, yeah. If not, up to 1,000, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of Yep. And I would always give people, I would just say, you know, hey, I'm Christina. I'm a writer, you know, photographer from a little town in Alaska. And I'm just out here documenting life during the pandemic. And I want, you know, would you care? You know, and I was drawn to, I mean, probably most of the people I interviewed were at gas stations because that's where I frequented. But yeah, it was just a very organic. I was basically just wandering the Southwest and the Great Plains. Going to, you know, I didn't have a plan. It was all very organic. I had maps I'd gotten from AAA. I'd open my map and I'd be like, okay, well, look at, oh, there's some green space, or what is this toadstool geological thing? Or I'd be somewhere and someone would say, oh, hey, you looking for something to do? And I'd be like, I'm always looking for something to do. And someone would say, well, you really need to go here. I'm like, okay, that's good enough for me. If I look, and hands down, those were the best places. You know, and I was always on back roads. Scenic roads, my map on my phone is permanently on avoid highways and tolls. And so I would meet people. Yeah, gas station, you know, so I'd walk into like a gas station or a little thrift store or a little mom and pop shop or whatever. And I would just be like, I would say, oh my gosh, I love your mask. I'm doing this. Could I take a picture of you and your mask? Oh, sure. So I take a picture and then they would just start talking. Sometimes I would have to ask the leading question. I would be like, wait, this is wonderful. Can I interview you? Can I record you or you know, video or audio? And they'd be like, sure. Some people preferred audio. Most people were totally fine with video, which was also a surprise. You know, I interviewed a postmaster at a post office in a tiny town in New Mexico. And because he was wearing his, you know, SDS stuff, he said, no, audio is fine, but, you know, not video because I'm a work and, you know, and then there was a woman who worked at a gas station. Oh, she was phenomenal. I went in to get a cup of coffee and this little place was just hustling, bustling. It was in Colorado, down at the Rocky Mountains. And I was getting my coffee and the door's ringing, people come and go. And she's like, oh, hey, Bob, how's your wife's knee? Hey, Joe. Hey, oh, Samantha, how are the kids doing? Like every person got this greeting. It would be like a Homer moment, right? Every person. And she was just so lovely. And I said, I got to tell you, just standing there making my coffee, listening to you, like you just totally made my morning. I said, your spirit and the way you greet people. And I shared what I was doing with my project. And I said, could I just ask you some questions? She said, sure. And she let me do a video. So we're in this tiny little, it was a chain gas station, but it was a small one in this small town. And as I'm interviewing her, you know, she's pausing to be like, oh, hey, Bob, you know, oh, yeah, no, so I worked here for this. Oh, you know, well, you know, it was just so lovely, so sweet, and so beautiful. And I posted it, and I was so excited. And then about 3 days later, because I had business cards made and gave her business, 3 days later, she sent me a text message and said, you know, I was thinking about it. Could you please take my video down off your page and not include it in your project because I probably should have asked permission. You know, I'm in this gas station wearing this, you know, my whatever, and I didn't ask and I don't want to get in trouble. And I said, absolutely. I totally respect that. I said, I would be happy to reach out to the company if you wanted. But if you prefer not, she said, no, I think it's better we just leave it out. And I was like, oh man, because it was just so beautiful. But, you know, I can tell her story myself. I don't have to, you know, my goal here is at some point, I would love to travel through every state and document pandemic in every state. I'd love to take this project internationally, you know, when we can travel, because I think even though vaccine or no vaccine, whatever, at some point, you know, hopefully the world is going to turn again and we'll be able to travel a little bit. And anyway, it's all part of the organic nature of it, but I'm at least documenting, you know, every single state in the U.S. And then I want to create a coffee table book of the photos. And I also would like to create a traveling art exhibit of still images, moving image, so have the audio running, have some video running. You know, this is a big, I just feel like this could be big. This pandemic, you know, has leveled the playing field, as they say. It's really important to me to document it. I think right now we're all probably beyond fatigue, you know. We just want this to be over and go back to things that are normal. But I continue to keep in touch with folks. They're in all my time on the road, 10 weeks, 12,000 miles, averaging about 150 miles a day because I was really pokey and made a lot of stops, lots of U-turns. I met a man named Mark at the Toadstool Geological Park in Nebraska. And this was one of the places where I stopped in a little gas station. And this woman had this great mask that said, please hug me, just kidding, stay away. And I was like, oh gosh, I have to take a picture of him. And lots of times that was my approach. Oh my, I love that mask. I have to take a picture. Can I take a picture? Yes. And then I would say, this is what I'm doing. And they would be like, oh, okay, sounds fun. Her husband was sitting there doing a scratch-off lottery ticket. And he goes, you looking for something to do? And I'm always looking for something to do. You got to go to this Toadstool park down here. It's about 20 miles. I said, okay. So I'm thinking I'm going to a park and there's going to be some rock formation that looks like a toadstool. And I'm driving. And I see this off in the distance. I'm like, oh, that would be kind of cool. Kind of a rough road, but I'm 20 miles out of the way. Yeah, it's all right. And then the sign says to take a left, which was the opposite direction of what I was seeing. And I turn left and it's just this amazing, I mean, millions of little tiny toadstool rock formations. And I ended up meeting Omar. We both camped in the parking lot. He was the only person in my trip that I encountered who was doing kind of a similar, he had just started out from the East Coast and was going across the country in his truck. And he had a kind of he didn't have a plan for how long he was going to be out there. He quit his job and whatnot and was just had his own project going. And that was really, really lovely. We spent 2 hours masked in my van, the only person who ever got in my van, and interviewing each other for a mutual project. So, and he's out there doing his thing now. So
that's wild. Are you, you have his name and number, right? I'm just thinking it's going to be kind of cool when you guys can compare notes.
Oh, sure. No, it's going to be great. He actually was just in a car accident. He was hiking and he was in the back of his car, just kind of laying down, taking a nap, and he got his apartment hit. And so he's actually in the hospital right now. He's in a neck brace. And so I just posted a little tiny bit about his story and that if people would please keep them in mind. And I was like, good Lord, like that could have been me.
You're listening to a pre-recorded coffee table with Homer storyteller Christina Whiting, recounting her journey in the lower 48 for her project Behind the Mask, Our Stories. Now, let me ask you about, you're talking about, you know, what you hope to do with all these interviews and photos and videos and everything in the future. How do people access this information now? Is all of this on your website or?
On my Facebook page, it's Behind the Mask, Our Stories. And that's the page I created back in March when I was in Whidbey, which just happens to be where I am right now again. And yeah, you know, I've got some things. I'm reaching out to some media to pitch some stories. I had thought about when I was on my trip, I thought about having a website, an Instagram, a blog, all this stuff. And it became too much for me to manage. I thought about having a podcast. You know, I want to get back out on the road again. So my trip ended. So New Year's Eve, I flew into Washington. I came here. I did a 10-day self-imposed quarantine just to be safe for the person I'm renting from, for me, for this community. And I'll be back in Homer at some point. But for right now, I'm continuing the project here, which is interesting to be back here now, you know, near year later after this started. So for right now, not every interview is on the Facebook page. Some of my interviews were hours long and the videos would never post and I haven't taken the time to sit down and cull through and edit. So everything on my Facebook page is very raw. If there are videos, if there are audio clips, none of those have been edited. So there's a lot of, you know, you might get coffee, you might get a car honking. But, you know, my whole idea was that I wanted it to be like people were out there with me. I was also very fortunate when I was starting out. You know, I had saved up some money and I had an idea of a budget, but someone suggested that I start a GoFundMe, which I immediately said, oh my gosh, no. In a time of a pandemic, when people are losing their jobs, struggling and all this. I quit my job to do this project. I was working in hospice, and I quit to come out here on the road and, you know, and launch myself out and see what this could be. So I didn't want to do a GoFundMe. And then several other people that I mentioned it to, they were like, no, I would totally support you. And someone said to me, you know, this could give an opportunity for people who want to participate to participate. You know, and I thought, well, I felt awkward doing it. I felt like I might be judged for doing it. But I thought, well, if people don't want to support, they don't have to support. And hopefully no one's going to be ugly to me. And I'll just put it out there. And it just knocked my socks off, the support. You know, I surpassed my goal. My goal was basically $2,500. My goal was, I just put it out there. It was basically covering my van rental. And friends, family members, people I met along my trip, people I interviewed, have been supporting me. So these were all project supporters. And so they donated everything from, you know, $10 up to $500 with, you know, some of the different donations I got. And yeah, I'm incredibly grateful to these people. So what I did was I created personalized emails. So each one of these individuals, of which there are 27, I believe. Yeah, 27. They each got, you know, emails from the road, and I sent postcards from the road. So those people got postcards from the road, and they got emails from the road, and I gave shouts out of thank you to them as often I could on my Facebook page. People were really overwhelmingly excited to participate in this project, and all of those people's names will go in my coffee table book, and they'll be a part of the traveling exhibit. Whatever I do where I can include their names, they will certainly be listed. And that's, you know, it's ongoing. I haven't put out another appeal. I don't know if I will. I may or may not. But I'm very grateful to the individuals who suggested that I have it. It would not have occurred to me to do it. And it actually freed me up to stay on the road 2 weeks longer than I had originally planned. I ended up staying past Christmas. I had thought I, you know, wanted to be back off the road and home for Christmas, but I'm here now continuing it. So it's a lot of, I guess what I'm trying to do, Jay, is provide glimpses into the pandemic through, you know, it may be the couple who both had COVID, and I met them in Nevada. They were one of my earlier couples, and they told the story of kind of the lasting effects. You know, the woman has asthma, the man, well, they lost, you know, they had to take time from their jobs and that. Those kind of stories too, just a lot of like snapshots, like a glimpse in. This is really like a glimpse in. This isn't like a memoir, and this isn't a biography. It's really these little snapshots. Literally, if you look on my Facebook page, just about every day I update the cover photo a couple times, up to a dozen times. And it's just like yesterday I'm on the south end of Whidbey Island. I went to the north end to do some errands, and I was just wandering around. And I took, you know, it's people, it's places, it's signs. I've got this great sign of the Navajo Nation where, you know, this person masked, it's a drawing, and it says, wear your mask, stay safe, your community needs you. That one really struck me. To yesterday, two completely random, totally different places, I saw women wearing Tweety Bird masks, so took their pictures, so their pictures on there. So, you know, every day I'm updating this, and people are like, you know, I don't know how many Facebook followers I have. I'm not, you know, it's wonderful. I'm grateful to everyone who's, you know, looking at my page. But it's really, I think, just to break the isolation up a bit. And I know I'm following other pages where people are, you know, are sharing their experiences. So it's what this is to me is lovely for me personally. I'm so grateful to everyone who shared with me, whether they gave me permission to record it or not. I feel very humbled and very blessed, and I just want to keep this going. I think it's really important that we take time to share our story, and I think it's really important that we take time to hear people's stories.
Can you maybe tell us a little bit about what you heard from these people? That, I mean, it's behind the mask, you know, so it's got the implication of the COVID. Did you only talk about COVID with these people, or were there you talk about their lives, or what were the topics that came up?
So the pandemic is what was the driving force behind this project, and this was something that I wasn't 100% sure how it was going to, you know, all kind of play out. I shot totally shot from the hip. When I started out, I had, you know, 50 questions I thought I might ask people, but I'm not going to stand talking to somebody in the middle of a parking lot in a fun mask reading this list of questions. So it was just, again, the word organic. Usually it was a minute to 2.5 hours of conversation about life. You know, so tell me about, well, how long have you lived, you know, in this rural area? How long have you lived? Do you farm? You have family here? La, 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 la. And then I might just toss in really casually. I'd be like, you know, have you been affected by the pandemic at all? And then they might have a really lengthy answer, or they might have a really short answer, and then we would move on to something else. So every single interview, I asked that question, but it was never the focal point of the interview unless it became the focal point for them. I let them really lead it, guide it, determine the way that it went. You know, the couple, when I was, it popped into this little, the alien inn in the, you know, extraterrestrial highway in Nevada. I had this list when I started out on this project. I created a list of everybody. I wanted to interview people who had COVID, people who had lost their job, maybe lost their home, an RV salesman, a hairdresser, pastor, a mother, a psychologist, a lawyer. Like I had this long list of people that I thought would be interesting to interview. That was just kind of a starting point, right? And then I got out there and it just became, didn't have tattoo artists on the list. And that was fantastic. It just became, you know, everybody has a story. I came out of Death Valley, heading to a different area, and I'm driving down the road. I've got to get gas. And I'm in this really, you come out of Death Valley in this area and all of a sudden it's really industrial and ugly. And it was very jarring. I had to get gas, and I see this little old man walking down the side of the road, and he's got to be in his, he looked like he had to be in his 90s, he had his flannel shirt and his jeans, his suspenders reminding me of my grandpa, big, you know, Trump hat on, and he's just walking, and I'm like, oh, gosh, I want to talk to that guy, but I was literally out of gas, so I drive up to the pump, and before I can even put the pump in my vehicle, I see he's walking by the side of my van. So there's a line of people to get gas behind me because this is the only gas station. And I look at them and I'm like, I just make the motion of, hold on 1 second. And the person behind me can see my sign on the back of my van that says, you know, care to share your story with me? So I go up to this guy and I'm like, hi. He goes, hi. I said, I would love to talk to you, but I got to get back. I got to get some gas. He's like, well, I've got to get, you know, I walk 3 miles every day. I got to go, blah, blah, blah. I said, okay, hold on. So I go, I get in my van. I put the thing back in. I move my van. And then we talked for probably a half hour. He was 92 years old and had lived in this community 60 years and wasn't affected by the pandemic at all. And I asked him, you know, I see your hat. Are you excited about, you know, the upcoming election? And yeah, he was really excited. And he told me all the great things about, you know, why he was supporting President Trump and whatnot. And okay, I got to go. It was nice talking to you. It's like, oh, you know, well, thank you very much. And then off he went.
You know, let me ask you, you know, you said before you didn't want to quantify things on the trip, but overall, based on your trip and the people you've talked to, how's America doing?
You know, yeah. And that's one of the questions that's really large. You know, I would say that's a difficult question to answer. You know, on my list of people to meet, I wanted to talk to, you know, homeless, jobless, houseless, you know, the people who are really, really deeply. I didn't want to just talk to people who had COVID and been okay, people who'd been hospitalized, people who, you know, were doing. I wanted to kind of catch people on both ends and certainly in the middle, right? And I will just couch this by saying that I did end up meeting a man. We were both stayed at the same gas station parking lot when there was a snowstorm in Oklahoma. But he lived in his car. He's 70, and he's lived in his car for 10 years. There were other people living in their cars that I tried to speak to, and they weren't open. They didn't want to speak to me. I talked to people at RV park who had been at, you know, the RV parks all year. They shared, but they didn't really get into the pandemic. So that's a tough question for me to answer, JV. And this is why I want to go back out, is because I feel like this first 3 months, I got a sense of how I want to do this project, how to interact with people, how to find people. You know, not every day on this, when I was out, did I interview people. Not every day did I have the energy. Not every day did I feel like I wanted to talk to anybody else. Sometimes I woke up and I was, for some reason, just feeling grumpy and didn't want to connect with folks. But I did try to interview people at least every other day. Sometimes I'd interview one person, sometimes I'd interview five or six, and then I'd have to take a couple days off. So when I can go back out on the road again, I want to very intentionally seek out these other stories that I didn't. So I don't know if I can answer your question on how America's doing. I can only answer your question on how the Americans I interviewed are doing, really, honestly. I think that there are people living in their cars, and I don't know their stories. There are people who I know that people told me, oh, yeah, my cousin lost their job and moved into their RV, and now they're staying at an RV park. And I was like, oh, do you think that I could speak with them? And they'd call, and that person, you know, didn't want to talk to me right at that moment or whatever. You know, I wasn't staying around in places for a week. I was constantly moving. So maybe in a couple of days, that person might have been comfortable. So, you know, I want to get back out there. I want to spend more time in areas so I can reach more people, you know, in the same area, and definitely dig deeper into what this is, what this looks like. You know, I don't know. So I'm not answering your question because I can't answer it, really.
That's fine. It seems to me that what the trip and the project has resulted in is you wanting to do more of it.
Yeah. And I came to Whidbey first to rest. I loved my trip and I loved the way I did it, but it was exhausting. It was exhausting physically. You know, the constant movement, it was exhausting, and I'm not complaining, it was beautiful, but, you know, hearing people's stories and a lot of emotional stories takes its toll, a little bit, you know, you're very empathetic. But it was wonderful. I wouldn't have changed the thing the way that I did it. It was beautiful. It was perfect. And it was a lot of unexpected moments and just amazing people and amazing places. So yeah, one of the takeaways for me is that I want to keep going, and I don't know what that looks like. But when I decided to just take a little bit of a breather and take some time to rest and reflect, that's what I'm in the middle of doing right now. And so for, I think, a week when I first got to Whidbey, I didn't post anything on the page. I basically posted, I'm taking some time for rest and reflection, and kind of left it at that. And then now, and then I did my, you know, my quarantine, so I wasn't out. So my pictures would have just been, you know, my place and my neighbor. So it came out of my self-imposed quarantine. I started wandering around and so reposting photos. And so, you know, the photos are everything from people in masks to, you know, maybe it's a painted rock I hit to, you know, here's a photo of a hiking trail. I mean, it's people, it's places, it's signs. It's so the pandemic is kind of the thread of why I was out there, but not every story, you know, not every, the pandemic was the impetus and still remains the impetus to, you know, but it's not like if you're going to go to my page, it's going to be like, oh my God, pandemic. No, yesterday I posted pictures of llama with sheep and a pumpkin patch with crows and swans and Canada geese and the women wearing their Tweety Bird masks. And so there's always like, you know, this, but at least my intention is not, that it's not a depressing page or like, oh my God, I just can't stand to see one more, you know, pandemic related thing. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's about hope. It's about resiliency, but mostly it's just about real. It's about real life. And the fact of the matter is that even during a pandemic, life goes on, right? Like we are working or we're not working, but we're eating. We have places to stay, whether that's a car or an RV, or a shelter outside, or a park bench, or a house, an apartment. You know, we're alone. We're in our bubble of people. We're like that. There's so many stories. There's so much material, and I'm just one person. I mean, 10 different people could do what I'm doing, and each project would look different because we all bring different things to it, and we visit different people and the way we interact in the world. And so this is just me trying to document it, document to the best of my ability, you know, what I went to see and experience, and purposely going out and seeking.
So, you know, I was curious, you know, this project sounds a lot like it sounds a lot like my dream trip, which I did spend four months in those same areas and 2017. But it really sounds like, are you familiar with the book Blue Highways by William Least Heat Moon?
For sure.
Well, I remember hearing that on NPR's Radio Reader back in the early 80s, and it's been stuck in my mind ever since. And that was the reason I took my road trip, was because I wanted to be on the blue highways. I could probably count on one hand the hundreds of miles I drove on an interstate, just to get from one place to another quickly. And it's just all these back roads where, people are moving at a slower pace is just wonderful to encounter,
Yeah, no, it's all just America, and the back roads are just spectacular. And people are the takeaway is that people are so kind. Were it not a pandemic year, I may not have been out at this exact time, and were it not a pandemic year and I was to be out, I have no doubt people would have invited me to stay in their homes, to sit and have coffee on their decks. That's been my experience anytime. And another part I will say selfishly is that I didn't want to just sit in Homer. I'm like, I love to travel. If I'm not in Homer, I'm traveling. And I was like, well, I may not be able to go to Spain or Turkey or Africa right now, but I can go on the road. And again, I say that cautiously because I take this very, very seriously, this pandemic. That I'm not insane that everybody should just get, rent a van and be on the road. And I'm not saying that I was maybe 100% smart in what I'm doing. I'm very, very grateful that I've been tested multiple times. I'm very grateful that I was able to stay safe. It's not the easiest thing to be out there and to stay safe. It's a lot of vigilance. But I'm not dissuading people. I'm just saying I'm not encouraging Jay that everybody should now get a van and, go running around. I think we still need to be very mindful and very smart. But for me, this project also brought a sense of, that whole thing that I started talking about, creativity and connection and community. I wanted to create this community of storytelling. And I wanted people to know they're not alone. And I also wanted to feel that I'm not alone. I felt very lonely on the road. There were many times I would be driving down some little back road and I'd pull over and just cry out of loneliness and like, what am I doing out here? And then that would last for however long it lasted. And then I was fine. And then inevitably I'd meet this amazing person and we'd have, this amazing conversation that maybe lasted 5 minutes or 10 minutes or half an hour. And I was renewed. But being out there brought a sense of, it's crazy to say this, but a feeling of normalcy for me in what is really not normal. And when people talk about the new normal, I don't buy that. This is not normal. Yeah, I don't want it to be the new normal. It's not. That's just me personally. So I don't know. I just, it reminded me that my fellow man, even, in this time of craziness and chaos, some people are thriving. I met people who opened businesses during the pandemic. There was a man in Kansas, who opened a flower shop. He had plans to open it pre-pandemic, and then he waited a little bit, and then he just went ahead and opened it, and he's doing really well. There was a woman also in Kansas who runs the Tin Roof Antique store, and her business is doing great. She was closed for the first little bit, but, it's masks mandatory, but people come in. My sense is, and my experiences, and for me too, people are starved for that kind of pre-pandemic life, right? I'll go to the grocery store sometimes when I don't need anything just to get out of my house and to be around people and to hear snippets of conversation and to feel like you can almost close your eyes. And you can close your eyes and imagine that it's a year ago, right? And I'm just at the store and I'm just eating bread and I'm just getting peanut butter and I'm not wearing a mask and no one else is wearing a mask and we're not all talking about COVID and the pandemic and all this. We're talking about, did you go to the beach today? And we're talking about our jobs and our families and people are laughing and I don't know. I'm certainly craving, connection and so, we're all pivoting and adjusting and reworking. It's been almost a year. So I don't know. I, I also listen to the news, and it's just crazy. There's so much chaos and everything. But during my trip, I mean, I didn't feel that. I didn't feel the chaos of our nation or the chaos of the world, even though, you know, I was out during the election. So I was out during the election and the pandemic, you know. Our ability to adapt is quite something. It's quite something. And it's going to take me a while to sit with all these. I mean, I look at these faces on my Facebook page and I listen to the videos or watch the videos and listen to the audio. And I'm just in love with every one of these individuals who opened, you know, and allowed me into their story, into their space, and who shared. And I think everybody can do that. You know, you call the neighbor or stand 6 feet away, you know, cross the fence or whatever. But I think, I don't know, even there's a pandemic and we need to be smart, but we can still connect with people. I don't know what that looks like for everybody. I don't have the answers. On the road, I very rarely, like if you say Alaska, people will be like, oh, well, you know, but mostly I was witnessing other people's stories. It wasn't about me. I just happened to be the person out here, you know, with in the van with my phone in hand, you know, and my heart wide open saying, hey, you want to share your story? And that's exactly what it says. You know, it's Christina, storyteller from Alaska on my magnet. And it says, care to share your story with me. That's really what it was.
Well, Christina, thank you so much for talking with me. I really appreciate it. I can't wait to see what you do with all of this. I can't wait to see the coffee table book and the major motion picture and everything else that's going to eventually come out of your adventure. Thanks for talking with me. I really do appreciate it.
It's great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, you're very welcome. I appreciate your interest in the story. And yeah, and I guess I would also say if anyone, you know, people can post to my Facebook page. If anyone wants to reach out and share the story, I'd be delighted to talk to people by phone or FaceTime or whatever. And I hope people will just kind of pop on and maybe be inspired to, you know, reach out and share their own story. Or like I said, reach out to other community members. And we're all in this together. So I think it's important. We need to be together. So, yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to a pre-recorded coffee table with Homer journalist Christina Whiting. This show will be archived online at kbbi.org. I'm Jay Barrett.